wonderful to be part of this amazing conference. And yeah, I'm delighted to actually see a lot of you guys over there. Thank you so much for joining. And today I will be talking about a real fight. I'm pretty sure that a lot of people out there have already been exposed to a real fight, maybe on the street or maybe in a club, or maybe at least they saw something like that. Even if they haven't experienced it themselves, I'm pretty sure that a lot of you out there have already seen what actually happens when, well, one guy punches the other, right? This is what the common perception is, but there is so much more to it. And what it is what I would like to talk about today. So once again, if you have any questions during the session, then feel free to just send them question and answer box or in the check box, and I'll be happy to answer them after the main part of the seminar. So today we're going to have a couple of topics. First of all, the five phases of a fight. Afterward, I would like to introduce you to a martial art that I have been practicing for 30 years. It's called Wing Chun Kung Fu. If you are not familiar with Wing Chun, it's what the late Bruce Lee used to practice. And lately, it's got a lot of credibility and a lot of fame through the Ip Man movies, or IP Man movies, as a lot of Americans like to call it. So yeah, it's a very direct, it's a very effective, quite brutal system of self-defense. And when we speak about a physical fight, we talk about a real fight, and there is no such thing as beauty. There's no such thing as fairness. And this is why we have to be prepared, or why we should prepare ourselves in a way that is not, that doesn't have these aspects in mind either. So we shouldn't want to be fair. We should want to survive that fight. And I would love to give you a couple of ideas after the first session. I'm going to demonstrate a little bit, and I would love for you guys to actually get off your chairs and follow along with a few exercises that I have in stock for you. But for now, let's begin with the five phases of a fight. Now, usually when I ask someone, have you ever seen a fight? And what actually happens there? Then mostly I get a response like, yeah, one guy pushes the other and then they start punching. Not quite. Or other people say, well, one guy smack talks another one, and then all of a sudden they're wrestling on the ground. Yes, all of that can happen. But the interesting part is that there is actually a ritual to a fight. What do I mean by this? I'm going to come up with a thesis now that somebody who punches somebody else on the street doesn't actually want to severely injure him. If you would want to do that, if you would want to injure him, he would probably just take a gun and kill him, right? Which would be the ultimate pain. But there is a ritual that a normal person, if we are normally wired in our brain, has to go through in order to be able to severely injure someone. And that also gives us a chance to de-escalate a situation, because we go through these phases. Now, what are those phases? What is usually the first thing that happens when an aggressor meets his victim? The first thing he has to do is he has to see him, right? Now, when I do this right now and I look from the left to the right, then I don't particularly look at you, right? So this is something that makes people feel comfortable usually, but when I stare right into the camera, you know I mean you. And this is usually what happens in the first phase, right? You get approached in a very aggressive manner, and you see that somebody is looking at you in a way that you probably don't like. Now, here's the thing. When this happens, you still have the chance to do something in order to get away from that situation. So the first phase that we have here is the visual phase. Let me introduce you to my friend David. We've been together pretty much our whole life, and we've been practicing Wing Chun together for a long, long time. Now, let's picture the following scenario. We are somewhere in a club, and there's a large distance between us. Maybe there's also a lot of people between us. And then, just as I drink my Coke and I look around the room, all of a sudden, I see that this guy is looking at me in a way that I don't like it. Now, what can I do? Most men, what we usually do is, what's he looking at me? And I just look back, which is the dumbest thing to do, right? Because this is not de-escalatory. So everything I want to do is to light a fight, right? Is it possible to actually get away from that situation in a way that keeps me safe and that keeps him safe as well? And if that's possible, then that's exactly what we want to do, right? So we still have that distance between us, and there's people in between us. This actually actually gives me the chance to, well, if I would be looking at David right now, as I'm looking into the camera, to just do this and to pretend I never saw him, right? I'm still seeing what you guys do over there, can still see the camera, but you don't see me looking back at you. Because what happens, obviously, if I look to him, is I connect with him. And the second I connect with his gaze, then he is able to go into the next phase. What that next phase is, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But for now, what's important to me is that you understand there is a way to de-escalate the situation. So I just look away and I move in another part of the room, or I leave the hall altogether, right? This doesn't mean that I just turn away from him and then leave, because then I wouldn't be able to see what he does over there. But I can still see what's going on and then leave. But what about a situation where the proximity is like this? That's a different story, right? Maybe I'm leaning against the counter over here and all of a sudden this guy comes into me and I'm just minding my own business and he's looking over my shoulder and I go, uh-oh, he's much, much closer to me. So it's harder, especially for a guy without his testosterone and all that, it's harder to get out of that situation without being perceived as, you know, well, you know, right? As a coward, right? So what can I do in this situation? What can I do in this scenario when he's already close to me? Doesn't matter if I'm a guy or if I'm a girl, there is somebody close to me who wants to approach me and I'm over here not feeling very nicely at the moment, right? Well, again, what you can do from here is you can take your glass of Coke and you can move away if he allows that. If he doesn't allow it, once again, we're in the next phase, right? But what I don't want to do is look at him and start talking to him when I see that this is an aggressive behavior that's coming from him. Because if that's the case, then this is definitely going to escalate, right? So I want to look away, still be able to see him. So if you should punch me from there, where you are right now, then I can still be able to do stuff from here because I can still see what is going on. Or since I'm a peace-loving human, I just leave and go find my friends. So that would be the first phase. It's not very realistic that this works all the time, especially if you really want some beef and if he is very, very close to me. Right? But if we have more distance between us, it's very realistic to get away from there. Now, what's normally the next thing? The second an aggressor approaches somebody and I don't retreat, I don't leave the scenario, but I actually look at him. What is the next thing that normally happens? Smack talk, right? What you looking at? You got a problem with me? And these kind of things, right? So that's normally the second thing that happens. So the second phase is the verbal phase. But let's just go back very quickly to the visual phase. So what chances did we have to get away from that? First of all, we looked away, but don't look away, right? So we made sure that we don't meet eye contact with the guy. So no eye contact. And leave the room if possible. That's not possible, that's what we're going to cover right now, okay? So after that, we're moving into the verbal phase, and the verbal phase is very aggressive usually. The words coming out of the person's mouth are not nice. And the kind of words that people use in this scenario, if it's clear that I'm the aggressor and I really just want to inflict pain on somebody, even if it's just psychological pain, it's going to be words that take away his right to be as valuable as I am. They call them words like asshole. Stuff like that. Those are not nice words. But it's important to understand that what these kinds of words actually do. When I'm the aggressor and you're my victim, and normally don't go up to him and go, you big, strong human being, you look so beautiful over there with your black and red shirt. That's not what people do, right? Because this gives him value. So all that we want to do, all that we want to do as an aggressor in this moment is we want to take away that value from him. This is why we bring ourselves mentally in a position from where it is okay for me to punch and kick an a-hole, to punch and kick these other words that come out of the mouth. Even though I use this word right now, and I apologize for that, I actually serve a purpose with it. It is important to understand that the words coming out of the aggressor's mouths, all these insults, actually bring him into a position where it is okay for him, where he is actually able to punch or kick or injure somebody. He would not injure the big, strong human being with the black and white, black and red shirt because he looks so beautiful, because he's just as valuable as me, am I saying that, as an aggressor? That's not what it is. But by actually bringing him, his social proof, down here so that the aggressor thinks he's up here, it's totally okay to actually hurt this person in his mind. Now, we're in this verbal phase, but what can we do if we get approached by that? Usually it looks like this. When you approach me and you smack talk me, I didn't do anything. Yeah, right? We try to think, did I just do something that could provoke this guy to come toward me and to smack talk me? Right? Why is he approaching me? And it's usually questions that are coming out of the aggressor's mouth, like, what you looking at? You got a problem with me? You want a piece of me? These kind of things, they're all questions. And once I start thinking about those questions, and once I start dealing with these questions in my head, this makes me freeze up. And that's not good, because it doesn't put me in a relaxed state, which means I'm probably not going to be able to react in a relaxed way when something happens, and we have to be relaxed in order to react efficiently. I'm going to talk more about this a little bit later. Okay, so what we can do in this moment, for example, and this is a very tough thing to do for men again, is the second I do get approached by you, I need the bathroom. Or maybe I say, piece of cake, I need my piece of cake. Where's my piece of cake, for crying out loud? It doesn't really matter what I say, right?
What you looking
for? James, how you doing, James? Hey, man, I haven't seen you forever. It's great to see you over here, right? The thing is, or the key is, I don't answer him. I don't allow him to overwhelm me with his presence and to overwhelm me with all of his questions. The second I do that, I shrink, right? It's like when he asks,
what are you looking for?
I'm not looking at anything. What do you mean? I didn't do anything. And I'm over here, right? I'm always on the defenses, and this doesn't make me strong, it makes me weak, right? But if I realize that this is a ritual, this guy has to go through this ritual of various stages in order to be able to actually hit me, then I can make use of this, and I can de-escalate each one of those steps. Right? He looks at me, I look away, just de-escalated the first step, if I get out of the situation now, right? If he talks to me and he asks me these questions before he gets physical, which will be the next step, I can just not answer him and leave and go to other people and try to get other people into the situation in order to help me. Okay, so thank you. This would be the verbal phase. And the solution would be, don't answer. And use a trigger word. This trigger word, again, can be anything. It can be cherry pie. It can be holidays. It can be everything's cool. It can be I'm so pretty, or whatever it may be, right? But what is important is that you use this trigger word and you practice it beforehand, maybe before you go out on Saturday night, right? You practice it so that this trigger word, the second you say it, it makes you get emotion and it makes you leave the scenario. This way, he's still safe, I'm still safe, everything's cool, hopefully. Unless it doesn't work. And while he approaches me, I keep answering him, and I keep that dialogue up. Because usually the next thing after this is when you talk to me, and I answer, I'm not looking for anything. Normally the next thing is that he pushes me, right? And pushes me away. Now, where do we know this from? Where do we know the pushing phase from? Think about the animal kingdom. Sharks that are surrounding their victim, and they ram it first in order to see if there's any resistance coming, for example, right? So these are things that the pushing is not really it can be a very dangerous attack. If I trip and fall and then I bang my head against the wall and there's a nail coming out of the wall or something like that, yes, then it can be deadly. But it would be more lethal, obviously, if you would start punching or eye gouge me or punching to the throat or something. So the push is still a test. The pushing phase is still part of this ritual. So let me just write this down. First phase, push phase. Or pushing, right? So, and once this happens, we are already in a physical fight. And when we're in a physical fight, right, he's not supposed to touch me, right? When it comes to the law, he can look at me, yes, no problem. He can talk to me, yeah, that's fine, but he's not allowed to touch me and push me, right? The second this happens, what can I do? I have to become physical myself. I have to at least bring my arms up in a de-escalatory way that signifies, not to him, but everybody else, that I'm the victim here and I didn't start this thing and I don't want any trouble, right? For example, when you push me, What's possible is to bring my arms up in a way that is defensive, and to use my voice and to use my body in order to say, stop, leave me alone. Hey, you, mister in the yellow shirt, this gentleman is trying to get me into trouble, for example, right? So, but this is, it's important to understand, this is already physical escalation or interaction. So it is okay to at least bring your arms up in a way that is de-escalatory now, and to prepare yourself for what may come afterward. Because right now, reason, forget about it. It's going to be very difficult in this phase to go back one phase, to go back into the verbal phase and try to talk some sense into him. Usually the second he goes forward and he's in motion towards you, that's normally not the last thing that happens, is the push. Right? Usually this actually ends in the next phase, and that would be the actual physical escalation. Yeah, so the push phase, we have to come up with our defense stance. We're going to go into this in a while. Defense stance and yell for help. Engage other people. Bring the arms up and go, hey, leave me alone. I don't want any trouble. Sir, can you help me, please? You there in the blue shirt. That's also an important thing. Studies have shown that people are very interested in helping. People would help, but most of the time they don't do it because they are afraid themselves. So normally when you see some people getting at it, right, and you have a lot of bystanders, then it should be easy for those people witnessing this to jump in and to help the person who is the defender. However, most of the time that doesn't work. That's simply because these people are fearful themselves. They don't want to get punched, they don't want to get kicked, they don't want to get involved in this fight, right? However, there are a lot of nice, great souls out there who actually do this. But this puts us into a precarious situation if all we do is just take a step away and go, help. It's different if we actually approach somebody and say, sir, you with the blue jacket, ma'am, you with the yellow pants on, can you please call 911? Can you please help me? This is a different story, because this actually puts your focus, or the focus of these people on you, and that you actually tell them what to do. In a stressful scenario, nobody can think clearly. So in a stressful scenario, you have to tell people what to do. And in this situation, it helps a lot to actually address somebody straight and then tell them what to do. Can you please, you with the yellow jacket, can you please call 911? You with the blue pants, can you please help me right now? These kind of things, yeah? That's what's important. So far, we have the visual phase, we have the verbal phase, we have the pushing phase, and we have the actual physical escalation, usually starting either with punches or with kicking or with grabbing and pushing and throwing someone on the ground. And this is where it becomes really, really dangerous. There's a new phenomenon. Usually, back in the old days, in the golden days, a fight was over when one person was lying on the ground. That's it. I win, I'm still standing, you lose, you're on the ground. However, that's not the case anymore. Nowadays, it happens over and over again that other people get involved the second the person is on the ground. It's a terrible thing, but then actually people don't help the person on the ground, but they actually go against him. Absolutely terrible. So this is where you don't, even if you're a ground fighting specialist, when you're on the street, you don't want to end up on the ground. You want to make sure you finish the scenario before. You de-escalate, and if it's not possible, you try to finish the scenario with physical means, but don't get on the ground in case this guy may also have his peers with him. However, if you should end up there, this is what I call the phase of no return. Let's call it the phase of chaos right now. Because once you're over there, if you don't train this all the time, it's going to be very, very difficult to maneuver out of that. So, once again, these are the five phases that we usually have in a fight. Now, there are exceptions, and those exceptions are extreme environments, such as a war, for example. If a soldier gets an assignment to take out the enemy, that's a different situation, right? Then they have snipers and stuff like that. But this is not what I talk about. I talk about the average fight that happens on the street, the stuff that happens every day in clubs and normally not malls, but clubs is the environment that where I experienced it a lot, because I used to work as a bouncer for 8 years, and I had the opportunity quite often to actually take a look at how do these things build up. This is nothing that I came up with. This is a ritual that has been around for a long, long time. And it's important for us to understand that the aggressor usually has to go through these steps, because then we can make use of them and realize, hey, there's something boiling over there, and they're in the visual phase, they're in the smack talking. This happens to me. What can I do in order to get out of this situation? This whole thing, this whole ritual, is actually an antithesis to killing. Once again, if I would want to kill my opponent, I would take a gun and just shoot him, right? But this is not what happens most of the time, which is why it's so important to understand this, because this gives us the chance to realize there are steps, see those steps when they happen, and make use of them in order to de-escalate the situation. So far for the five phases of the physical fight. Now we get physical. Well, David and I are. You can still sit there for a while. So, we'd like to introduce you to one method of self-defense that you could use in a scenario such as this, where looking away did not work anymore, where we're talking to him, we're trying to talk sense into him, doesn't work anymore, and where I am now left to my arms and my legs in order to get away and survive the situation. It's going to be, first of all, we're gonna give you an overview of what the Wing Chun system entails. And after this, we're going to show you a number of easy to apply self-defense techniques that you can even try out from at home, or you just, grab a partner if you should have a partner around you, ask your spouse to actually choke you from the side and show you how to get out of that and that kind of stuff. No injuries, please. Okay, so the defense stance that I was talking about before is an interesting thing. Usually when we conduct self-defense classes at high schools, at kindergartens, at police stations, at fire stations, at companies, the reactions are always the same when it comes to a certain topic. And that is, we have this exercise where people walk toward each other, and he now has the assignment to say, stop when I get too close, right? Stop, okay. So, and normally this is too good already, because people are usually cool. People usually go, stop, because they know it's just a playful scenario right now. And what I do with these people is I tell group number one, okay, you're going to approach these people. First time when you go there, you just walk toward them very, very in a normal pace. And the second they say, stop. Just so that these people get a feeling for, okay, what is my intimate space, right? When I get to know somebody for the first time, we usually don't get that close. We usually have a distance about this, right? This is a nice distance that I just mentioned. Hey, I'm Tommy, good to meet you, right? So this is a distance that feels comfortable. A bit closer is a distance that's usually reserved for our friends, the people that we know very well. And everything that's closer, where I actually get to touch my partner, this is usually something that's reserved for our best friends, or our family, our spouse, our kids, and so on and so forth. Now, I tell group number one, you walk towards these people, and you do it three times. And I'm not going to tell these guys. The first time you go there, you walk toward them at a regular pace. The second time you walk up to them, you run as fast as you can. And the third time you do it, you start yelling. Whoa! The second you move toward them, you start yelling. And the reaction in these people who have no idea what the heck is going on is very interesting, because 80% of the cases, it's like this. They take a step away. They bring their body weight on the rear leg, and they have their arms up in a defensive manner. And this is the Wing Chun pre-fighting position, or the defense stance. It's so interesting. We all have it inside of us, even though we have no idea that we actually have it. So let's just talk about that right quick, why we have this kind of defense stance, what are the benefits, and what are the disadvantages. So let me just put the computer down a tiny little bit so you can see our feet as well. Okay. Good. Now, when I ask people what they would, can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, I was just going to suggest, you know, is that this might be an opportunity for people to get up and sort of engage with what they're doing as well. So if you've got a bit of space, you can give the defense stance a try and see.
Yeah, that'd be great. Exactly.
Brilliant. Thank you.
You have the chance, get on up. Okay. When I ask people what they would consider a secure, a safe, a strong defense stance, then usually what people do is they stand like this. They have a very wide stance down here, and they usually bring their body weight on the front leg, and they bring their fists up. This is what people usually tell me is a sufficient self-defense stance. However, it is a very strong stance, yes, but it also has its disadvantages. When I have my legs positioned in a wide position where maybe I have 60 or 50% of the body weight on the front leg, first of all, he can kick me to the groin. Secondly, he can sweep my leg because I have a body weight on it. And my arms look very aggressive because it's two fists. Now picture that scenario where you see two people getting at it and you didn't realize that something's boiling, and all of a sudden you see both of them stand like this, and then they go right at it. You're never going to be able to tell who was the victim, who was the aggressor. It's difficult, right? So what you want to do, put your feet next to each other, please. You want to take a step back and bring your arms up in a way that the palms are facing the front. Now, this is very open, right? This exposes my nose and my throat and my solar plexus. So you wanna make sure that you position those arms behind each other. This creates first a defensive stance, and it also gives us a multitude of defense layers. We have the first layer, which will be my foot. So when you approach me, I'm going to be able to kick. The second layer would be my arm. I can punch. If he takes this one out of the equation, then I still have a third means of defense that I can use from there. So let's practice this together. Stand in a parallel stance, take a step back, put your body weight on your rear leg, and bring your arms with the palms facing forward. Or there you go. Perfect. One more time. Stand in a parallel stance, take a step back, and bring your body weight on the rear leg. Do you have an idea why we would want to have our body weight on the rear leg? What could be the other benefits for this? Any ideas? Well, first of all, I can kick. If my body weight is on the rear leg, it takes a while for my rear kick to go here. Or if I would want to kick him with the front foot, I'd have to shift my body weight back and then go in with the kick. All of that takes time. However, if you already have your body weight on the rear leg, then the second he approaches, you always have the chance to move in with kicks right away. You also have a groin protection when you squeeze your knees together. So if you should kick you between the legs, then you still can avoid this, and you can actually use your front leg in order to defend against this whole thing. And now we are already deeply in Wing Chun structure. So, let me rewind a tiny little bit, but it was important for me that you understand, first of all, it has to be defensive, then you want to use your posture, and you want to use your voice by yelling for help, and you want to make sure that you keep away from the opponent. If my body weight is on the front, like I'm very close to his hand. However, here, this saves me at least a meter in order to get away from him. Okay, so I'm gonna rewind. All of these are techniques of Wing Chun Kung Fu. Let me explain what Wing Chun Kung Fu is. Then, after we demonstrate it a little bit, we're going to go into the nice warm-up exercise for all of us, and then some self-defense techniques. So, Wing Chun Kung Fu comes from China. It's about 350 years old, and the story goes that there was a lady who invented it, and the idea that Wing Chun has is that it is not fair. It doesn't deal with fairness. There are no tournaments that we can compete in. There are no points that we're allowed to punch to and others that we are not allowed to hit. Everything is allowed, and the idea is, since it comes from a lady, as far as the tale goes, we use the opponent's force and we don't use our own force as much. So we always visualize that I have a big guy like this facing me, and I have to be able to defend myself by any means necessary, using everything that's effective to me. So you can imagine what kind of techniques those are. Those are eye gouges, those are strikes to the throat, those are kicks to the groin, kicks to the knee. So everything that gives me space and time in order to get away, to be safe, and in order, well, to actually not to severely injure him, this is a second effect, right? But I want to get away from the situation and call the police. This is the main idea of everything that we do. First of all, we try to de-escalate. We have those five phases, right? And if I can't de-escalate it anymore, then I want to do everything that I can in order to save my body. And this is where Wing Chun kicks in. And this is the idea of it. Now, the first concept of Wing Chun is the attack along a straight line. We always use the shortest distance of 2 points in straight line. In Wing Chun, you will rarely see roundhouse things and stuff that go wide open. Everything is very fast, very dynamic, very direct, and very quick. For example, let's say you come in with a punch to the face. And punch me again. Yeah, then a straight kick, because my leg is longer than his arms, a very nice opportunity to defend against any kind of punches coming towards you. Let's talk about the punches. Let's say he just hits me anyway to the head. Something else to the head. Hit me for real. So all I do here is I use one concept, and that is the concept of going forward along the shortest distance of 2 points using a structure that presents a triangle. So what I do, I begin from the position that we have already learned. And the second I feel that he's attacking, I'm moving my hands forward, going to his face or to his throat, and at the same time protecting over here. The thing is, if you have somebody who can give you a good roundhouse punch or a good hook, then he will have 3 points. He will have the starting point, his shoulder, he will have the curve, the second, and he will have the actual target as the third point. Whereas we try to go forward from A to B just using 2 points, the starting point and the end point. Now, theoretically, we should be the first one hitting them. There are other things to be taken into the equation, which is my personal speed and my convincingness that it's important to go forward now and stuff like that. But if we stick to mathematics, then a short line is quicker than a curve, obviously. Now, let's say he comes in with a roundhouse punch, boom, then it should look like this. I should be able to get him before his punch gets me, which only gives him the chance, in order to get me, to come in with a straight punch, right? If you come in with a straight punch, I get contact here, and the triangular shape of my arms lets his arms slide past me, thereby bringing my arms into his body. So he may come in with a punch on the left, or with the other hand on the left, or on the right, or over here, or with this arm over here, or with this arm over here, and I always use the same kind of movement. That's called the wedge. This is going to be the next exercise for you. Get up, everyone. Let's try it together. So, from here, parallel stance. Let me shift the computer down again. You can see that better. We go into our defense stance. Body weight on the rear leg. Perfect. Now, from here, both hands tilt forward, and the rear hand is attached to the wrist of the front hand. And we bring this arm, these arms forward so high that we are able to look into our own face underneath our arms. The reason why I don't want to go low is if he comes in with something like this, he's definitely going to get me. So we want to make sure that we go relatively high so that we have something that is an attack and a defense at the same time. Let's do that 10 times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, freeze. And with the next 5 times, we also apply a step. 6, and go back. 7, and go back. 8, and go back. 9, and go back. And one last time, 10. Okay, this looks great already. The people that I see, they're really doing a great job over here. Now we combine everything that we've done so far. You push me, and I take a step away, and I say, hey, leave me alone. And then now he comes in with an attack, and I move forward with that wedge. And as I do, I want to point out something about the foot. When I step, I don't just step forward like this, because this will give him the chance to kick to my groin again, right? I also don't use the rear foot, because it presents the same opportunity. But what you want to do is you want to lift up your front foot diagonally, so this already presents a defense. Our steps always include the defense. So look at your front leg and bring it up in a diagonal fashion all the way up to the hip. Perfect. And then we bring it down and move the rear foot as well. So one more time. We defend against the kick, step forward, and withdraw the rear foot. So that again, once we're done with the foot, with the step, the body weight is resting on the rear leg. If you may get sore a little bit on the rear leg tomorrow, that's okay. So we go into the defense stance, having the arms up in a defensive fashion. Now the guy hits us, we defend and we move him with a wedge. 10 times. 1, arms up, and 2, perfect, and 3, stop. a little fine tuning, make sure your body weight is still on the real leg. That's important. And you can see yourself at the camera underneath your arms. You don't want to do this. You get hit, you want to be here. And go back again. And three, one, move in. And four, move in. And five, looks good. I'm proud of you guys, that looks amazing. Six, and seven, and eight. Two more times, come on, come on, come on. And nine, don't forget that that kick defense. And 10. All right, now do yourselves a favor. Lift up that right hand and give yourselves a high five. You did amazingly. That was very good. Okay, now, next thing. This is the first idea that we have in Wing Chun. We always attack, right? We don't stop at that wedge. We actually use something afterward that is called chaining techniques in order to make it very difficult for him to cut to launch a second attack. You see, I'm starting to pant already, right? It's becoming exhausting for me. It's exactly the way that it should be. So if you're not sweating by now, why not? Probably sitting in your chair, right? Okay, so those chain techniques look like this. David can attack me any way he wants, and I'm going to go in with the wedge and follow up with those chain techniques, just so you get an idea of what I mean by that. Yeah? Okay, thank you. Now, what looks like playing patty cakes is actually very, very strong punches because they include my body weight. Now, let's talk about body weight a tiny little bit. How do we efficiently use our body in order to have our punches and kicks be strong? Well, there are four ways of how we can generate force. Well, I'll go into this in a minute, but first of all, what you want to do is you want to use a step and a punch. Could you get that back, please? Yeah. Now, when you hit somebody and you want to make sure that this has maximum impact, then you cannot just hit them with the weight of your arm. You want to make sure that your complete body is behind this thing, right? For example, tell me which one, I give you three options. Tell me which one you think is the most powerful one, okay? So either I punch and step, or I step and punch, or I punch and step at the same time. Quite obvious, number three, right? So we launch the arm and the leg at the same time, right? My foot and my arm start at the same time. Now question to you, what will arrive at the target first? When both of them start at the same time, will they end up at the same time? Will the leg be there first because it's longer? Or will the arm be there first because it's lighter? Yeah. Number one, number three, I see a lot of them. Okay, it's actually the hand that will get there first, simply because it's much easier to bring power behind it. The leg carries so much weight. So we wanna make sure that we start both at the same time. The beauty about this now is, can we turn around? I'm sorry, David, I'm gonna have to hit you right quick. Hold this here, make some room. Now, the beauty about it is if I start at the same time and my hand hits you shortly before the foot reaches the ground, this will put all my body weight into his body, right? So you don't just want to punch. Yes, you can use your hip, you can use rotations and stuff like that, but you want to make sure that you really shift your whole body forward in order to really be powerful in that punch. Okay, so thank you. So, first idea, straight line attack, okay? And then we move in with those chain punches. Let's try those chain punches. Position your fist vertically in front of your solar plexus or in front of your throat. Let's say it's the right hand. Now, we place the left hand at the elbow tip and we tilt it forward. Perfect. Now, we cross the front arm. And shortly before that left hand reaches the final position, the right hand is being withdrawn and put in the original position that the left hand was just in. Perfect. Now we push forward, and then we retreat, and we punch over cross. Yeah, that looks great. Always crossing your wrists, crossing your wrists, crossing your wrists, like a chain, which is what we call them chain punches. Speed them up a little bit. Speed them up a little bit. Speed them up a little bit. Come on, 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 come on. Yes, perfect. Now, when you're fast and you practice this for a while, then you are going to be able to apply at least 5 or 6 punches per second. Can you imagine you go and you bring your whole body weight behind it, how difficult it will be for this guy to launch another punch, right? Maybe he wants to go left, right, he's jabbing across, pow, right? And I move in and push him over with my full body weight. It's gonna make it very, very difficult for him to come in with the second punch. In this scenario, of course, there are other scenarios. Usually in a seminar like this, there's always 100 naysayers going, yeah, but what if I bear hug you? Yeah, but what if? This is the scenario we're dealing with right now. So you move in with 2 punches and I go 1. And before the second one comes in, the wedge should have hit him. And then I follow up with 2 punches, elbows. You were just out of the picture. With chain punches and elbows and other chain techniques. Okay, this is the first concept of Wing Chun. Okay, we go forward, we attack along a straight line. However, there are situations where this doesn't work because this guy pushed my arms to the side the second I came in with a wedge. So if you brought my arm to the side when I have my wedge and I'm stiff, then I'm in trouble, right? So the second concept we use is being soft and flexible. There's a difference if I punch and he walks me to the side and I'm so stiff over here that I cannot turn toward him anymore and follow up with other techniques. Or if I use my arms like the branch of a tree and allow him to use that, allow him to push me to the side while still having flexibility in my arm. Imagine Sunday afternoon, you and your family are taking a walk and you're going through the thicket and there is this branch in your way and you push it away. Now the person behind you has to be aware not to get into his face, right? And that's exactly the idea. This is the way that Wing Chun arms work. When I don't manage to reach him, but I do get in contact with his arm, then I allow him to push me to the side, I borrow his force. My force goes over here, and the second it reaches a certain point, this is the point when his arm is empty, wham, then I actually go in. Now, of course, you may ask yourself, but how do I know which technique to use? When? In which scenario? And when do I have to be, when do I have to have a lot of forward pressure? And when do I have to be flexible? Good question. We have a training method for that. It's a sensory motor training called Qisao. And before I explain that to you, I have to take off my shirt because I'm sweating like crazy. Okay, so Qisao means sticky hands in Cantonese, or it means clinging hands. And what you see here when we perform a little bit of Qisao is that our arms move the whole time. They always constantly change positions, yet at the same time we maintain contact with the opponent's arms. Why do we do that? Well, first of all, in a real fight scenario, right, you attack with something, it's always different. Sometimes my arm is at the inside, this one at the outside, maybe there's something else, maybe the situation looks like this. Everything is always different. A real fight is a chaos. And it is very difficult to, before the fight actually happens, to say, well, he's probably going to attack me this way and that way, so my strategy is going to be this and that. It usually doesn't work. If you expect the guy to punch you with a jab, but then he comes in and bear hugs you, you're in trouble. If you expect a kick and brace yourself for a kick and all of a sudden he punches you to the face, you're in trouble, right? So we have to be able to feel what exactly it is that is going on over there and to always have the right answer. Going back to Qisao, sometimes my arm is at the outside. Sometimes it's below his arm, sometimes it's at the inside of his arm, and sometimes it's on the top. And those are all the positions that we have, right? We punch it, maybe here my arm is at the outside, maybe here my arm is at the inside, maybe here my arm is on top of his arm. So the situation always varies, but I have to be able to find a way to be safe even in these scenarios, but I don't care which angle of attack he uses. And Qisao helps us do exactly that by using pressure in our arms, not body weight, but pressure that is relaxed. We allow the partner to move our arms from in different positions, and those positions always present a protection for him. In this technique, it's very difficult for me to attack him here. from here. It's the same thing. It's very, very hard for me to come in. So he has protection at the outside. And when I'm here, he has protection on the inside the whole time. So we keep the structure while still being relaxed and allowing the allowing the partner to give us certain impulses on which we react with a relaxed power. So he will feel, for example, if I push his arms to the side, and then he will finish the scenario in his favor. He will feel if I push his arms down. Or he will feel if I push his arms up, for example, and will always be able to come back and to use springiness. His arms are like a steel spring that's being pushed together. And the second I release the force, wow, 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 it actually comes out and hits me. That's the idea. Now, in order for a student, a Wing Chun student, to not to kill themselves during training, because we usually always aim for the throat, there is a method of training that we call a Qi Self Section. A section is a chain of techniques that the student practices and practices and practices in order to later in a free fight, once one of those situations occurs, he can feel that this is what's going on. Let us just show you the first of many sections, okay? I begin with a palm strike, palm strike, palm strike on the other side. Then I go into a little bit of more complicated techniques. And the student practices this so many times that this becomes second nature. So he really doesn't have to think about it anymore because it just happens. This was the first section. Yeah, so the first movement that we had here was a palm strike beginning from the inside. This could be if he stands in his pre-fight position, all of a sudden guy comes in here. This is the moment that he has there, right? The second attack that we had was this one here. Maybe you want to choke me and manage to get out of the way in order to attack you here. So the idea is that we have all these techniques in that chain of movements so that by practicing and repeating and repeating and repeating, subconsciously, the student always trains every one of those techniques. And then we have something, the next level would be that we have something called free qisao, where you have contact with the opponent's arms, but the opponent comes in with any of those techniques, and I'm able to feel what's going on and to finish the situation in my favor. So once again, it's not necessary to see what's going on because my arms are attached to his arms now. In the beginning of the fight, I try to either hit him or at least to get that contact. So either I managed to hit him or at least I managed to get in contact somewhere. Now I have all the information that I need. Because I always know where my arms are. And when his arms are attached to my arms, all I have to do is to get out of the way of my own arms, right? And thereby he's not usually gonna be able to get me there, right? For example, if my arm is here and I feel that he's hitting me, oh, that's my timer, it's been 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, we're just coming up to the 5 minute end mark. So are you all right to take some questions, or do you want to just wrap up where you are with
this? Can I wrap it up in 1 minute? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
All right, perfect. So we try to feel this in free qi self. We don't even need sight for that. So I'm going to close my eyes, take this allow to attack any way he wants, and I will just feel what's going on here. And we try to feel pressure gas over here, feeling where the opponent is hittable and making use of that pressure gap in order to be able to finish the situation in our favor. So, thank you. Now, ultimately, the goal will be to put this into a real fight scenario. So I stand over here. The only thing I do when he attacks is I move forward. I do get in contact and allow his force to go past me in order to finish the scenario afterward. Two or three examples. Oh, that was four already. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
That's the main idea of this whole thing. So this is one method. There are so many methods of self-defense out there. A lot of them are amazing. I'm a big fan of those. I spent my time practicing Wing Chun. I hope we were able to give you a little idea of the Wing Chun. And if you have any questions. Great. I'll try to breathe and then to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a couple of seconds to breathe at least. Well, thank you so much for that. That's such a detailed and such a brilliant demonstration there. So we have a question from Anastasia. She's here on the panel, so she can unmute herself and ask you directly if you want to do that.
Well, yeah, thank you for the presentation, first of all. Secondly, my question is, can you please rephrase all of the information towards women? Because again, I get assaulted in punch way, but sometimes people try to assault me sexually, and it's not necessarily applicable because it doesn't.
Yes. It's actually very. Are we talking about the ritual section, or are we talking about the physical section per se?
Well, actually, both. But
both. Okay.
It's more important, like how.
All right. So as far as the ritual is concerned, the situation between a man and a woman is slightly different as it would be a boy against a boy, man against a man. Because usually, when guys approach each other, it's more aggressive to start with. With women, when usually 90% of the cases, it's men approaching women. Right, and this is usually a bit more friendly in the beginning. As long as they're still talking, hey, can I buy you a beer? Are you here by yourself? You know, can I buy you something? But the second you make clear that you're not interested in his approaches, this shifts. It changes from this looks nice. This lady looks nice. Maybe she's gonna have a drink with me. To what the hell? You know, I just overcame my fear to go over there and talk to her, and now she says no. I'm gonna show her. And then we have the same scenario that we had when two guys are approaching each other. So as a woman, you have more chances by saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm waiting for my boyfriend. Or you use your phone and you go. It's pretty much the same thing as we had in the guys section. It's just that it's usually, in the beginning, it's usually a bit less aggressive. Of course, that changes when we talk about domestic violence, right? Then all of these things are not there anymore. Then you have to protect yourself. You have to get other people involved. We have to talk about different dynamics in this kind of a scenario. That's completely different. What I'm doing right here is that I talk about the typical scenario that usually happens in a club or on the street. So what I'm trying to say is in the early stages of this approach, you do have more chances than a guy usually has. And when it comes to the physical part, this is where it actually is very effective for ladies. Even if you're faced with a guy who may be very muscular, simply because we don't hit to parts that they can train, where they can build up muscle. But you go here and you go here. And these are all things that you can do where you can inflict a lot of injuries, even when you only have 50 kilos, but you're faced with a 100 kilo guy or 105 kilos, I think I am right now. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you. So I still can hit the guy even if...
Oh, yes, you can. Oh, you definitely can. Because you use the springiness, you know? You have this springy force, and you use it to the throat, and you use it to the eyes, and you go to the groin, you go to the knee. Yes, totally.
Great. Thank you so much. And maybe just a quick response to Laura, who had a question about what do you do when you tense up too much in the arms in this exercise. Where does your attention have to be?
I didn't get the
last and question. Where does your attention have to be?
I see. That is always a very big problem for a lot of people. We don't just fight the attacker, we also fight ourselves, and we fight our mind and our brain. And our brain usually goes, I want to be anywhere else but here. This is something, in my opinion, that you can only solve by practice and by, just like with every fear, in order to overcome a fear, you have to face it in small steps, in very, very small steps. Now, martial arts training does give you this chance to not being thrown into the cold water, as long as you have a reasonable instructor, but to slowly be, to get accustomed into a situation that could be potentially dangerous. Now, by being approached into a violent situation in a playful way, in a training way, where the focus is first on the techniques and then it's on the actual escalation, you will strengthen the self-confidence level because you see that you can actually do stuff. It really, really doesn't matter how strong the guy is. A couple of examples. We don't have time for those self-defense movements, I promised you, but one example. In Wing Chun, you will never see that when somebody grabs me with those big arms that I will grab him and twist and move my body and stuff like that. That's not what it is. What I do is this. I eye gouge him right away. I punch him to the throat right away. I kick him to the groin right away. So you always use that stuff that really works, even if you don't bring that kind of weight on the onto the scales. Now, you still have to have that fight with yourself, obviously, right? But if you do that and you slowly get introduced into this kind of environment and you you play what it could be out there, then the situation is not as alien anymore. So the likelihood that you freeze up in the situation gets decreased more and more and more, the more you actually deal with the situation in a playful way. I hope that's making sense.
Yeah, that makes great sense. Thank you.
Sorry, if I can just interrupt, because I'm also I'm practicing a mix of martial arts, so it's really nice, and I really enjoy this also. But I meant in the exercise. So when practicing with someone else, I noticed that my arms are pretty tight.
Rigid. Yeah.
So what can I do in the like a safe setting?
I don't know what kind of style you're practicing. This really comes down to the style in many cases. Wing Chun is something that trains softness, relaxation, going with the force. Other styles do as well. Aikido, they have a slightly different approach than we have, where they use a lot of levers and we punch and kick and spit and hit and do poke and whatnot. So I think it really comes down to that you take a look at, are those techniques actually, am I realistically really able to fight against this guy that I'm sparring right now? And if the answer is no, then you may want to overthink the training. If it is something that that you are able to apply, if you only tense up when your brain is facing that problem, then
gonna have to wrap up now. So sorry about that, but hopefully you'll be able to get in touch with Tommy. We put some links in there for his website, his Instagram, his Facebook. So any questions that we weren't able to get to, then you can contact him, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to talk to you about that.
Really feel free to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed this, and the directness, and just the sort of practicality of Wing Chun, really.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
There are so many things we don't have. You cannot conduct a tournament and stuff like that, but when it comes to self-defense, perfect for that.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more about this, may I say that?
Yeah, we'll just get back to you in a second. Just a few quick announcements. So we've got the Facebook groups and the coffee breaks for you guys in between sessions. And also, this library is available for you to own. If you buy it now, it's 50% off. And it's a great thank you to all of us who've put the work on to make this happen. And it also keeps it free for everybody who's watching it right now. So just in the last few moments, Tommy, if you'd like to just wrap up with your top embodiment tip or anything else there, yeah.
I always use this one sentence in my YouTube channel, and I go, don't just train your body, train your body, your mind, and your soul. And I think this is the thing where what it really comes down to. Stay positive in everything you do. Don't focus on the problems. Focus on the solution of those problems. If you would like to know more about what I do, wt-online.com is my online academy. Once again, it's WT for Wing Chun-online.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for being here today.
Thanks, guys.